It's the Burt Cohen Show. Funny thing about dreams, they come from all different perspectives. Some have dreams of power over everything. Others have, different dreams about maintaining a republic, a democracy, maintaining what our founders, or at least most of them, intended. Boy, there is quite a difference. And where is the power over the future of this country? It's oftentimes in Washington, D.C., and they are doing some things right now that even for a cynic might upset you a great deal. Well, we're going to talk about what's going on. The headline written by our guest is Congressional Republicans Unleash Double-Barreled Attack on Health and the Environment. Double-barreled attack on health and the environment. Those are pretty strong words. Well, our guest is Scott Schlesinger. Scott, thanks very much for being with us on the Burt Cohen Show.
Glad to be with you, Burt.
Scott is legislative director of the Natural Resources Defense Council, which is an international nonprofit environmental organization with more than 1.3 million members and online activists. They've been at it since 1970. Well, Scott, again, thanks for being with us on the Burt Cohen Show. You say it's kind of a coup d'etat. That is a strong accusation beyond mere criticism of what's in the bills. What is in this bill and or are these bills? Why is it called a dual attack?
I probably used the wrong words. It was actually, but I didn't know how to say seven. It's a seven-prong attack, actually, on how our system works. The House of Representatives put seven bills together that individually would do really terrible things the way our government operates. For instance, Congress passed a Clean Air Act, and it passed a Food Safety Modernization Act. And people complain about the lengths of those bills. They're hundreds of pages long. But they have to give to the administrative agency the authority to write specific regulations and to implement that law. For instance, we wouldn't want Congress to try to figure out which particular medical treatment should be allowed under health care. So that's left to scientists and health groups in the federal departments. What these bills would do, among others, first one of them would say, no, you can't work on or promulgate, issue any new standards for anything when unemployment is above 6%, and which is about half the time since the end of World War II. So essentially, all the laws that Congress passed would not go into effect. For instance, in 2010, the president signed the Food Modernization Safety Act to make sure that imported food and foods sold in stores isn't tainted or dangerous. Nothing happens when the law gets signed into law except the agencies have to make rules and standards.
Right.
This bill would stop those agencies from doing that work. It essentially repeals the Food Safety Act, the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, the Dodd-Frank financial bill, and health care. But it sounds like, oh, we're just getting rid of regulations and unnecessary regulations, when they're not explaining that essentially it stops all regulations, all new standards.
that's, you know, if I didn't have so much of a lead up to this stuff and, you know, hadn't been paying attention the past couple of years, that would just shock me beyond belief. But it does seem like the formerly conservative Republican Party has just gone, frankly, like anarchist, really. I mean, no government at all. And having, you know, worked in the legislative process myself, having been a state senator for 14 years, I understand about the rulemaking once the actual legislation is passed. The agencies have to interpret it and develop it and implement it and make sure it happens. I'm reminded of, I believe it was Upton Sinclair's book, The Jungle, back at the turn of the last century, which talked about unsafe food production and how that was one of the first cases where the government recognized, hey, we can't, you know, be selling rotten meat as good meat. We have to, you know, we have a responsibility to do something like this. Does this actually, it sounds like it goes back pre Upton Sinclair's The Jungle.
Yes, it does. We've been regulating commerce pretty much through the regulatory process since about 1870s with the Interstate Commerce Act, because otherwise, if you don't have federal standards, we would have things where railroad tracks in those days couldn't go interstate because the lines were different widths.
Sure.
So we've been regulating things like that. I mean, Upton Sinclair's example is sort of ironic, because he wrote that about the employee safety and lack thereof, and instead Congress passed a law to make sure the food was safe.
Ah, interesting.
Sometimes it takes a little time for these things to get implemented, but that's exactly right. We've been doing this forever, and we've done this mainly what I work with at the Natural Resources Defense Council, is trying to protect consumers from things they cannot protect themselves, such as dirty air. You can't protect yourselves from air pollution or water that's coming into your house to drink. There are health issues with the chemicals that we use, and it's clear that we need to make sure that government has the ability to set up standards. It doesn't really help you when your only refuse after being hurt from a chemical is to sue somebody.
Yeah, it doesn't do you a lot of good. You got to have some protection in there. It's just mind-boggling. So you say it's not a double-barreled attack. What are the seven specific bills that you're talking about, Scott?
Another one essentially says that the president's term ends on Election Day if he doesn't get reelected. It says that the president isn't allowed to make final any rule between Election Day and the end of his term. They wanted to stop what is called midnight regulations. The presidents have a tendency to get a lot of regulations out at the end of their term.
Right.
Statistically, that's probably true. More rules do come out at the end of the term, but that's because the regulatory process right now, where people are talking about too many rules, the problem is the rules take too long to get out. We've just set up a standard for suntan lotion. It took 10 years to set up a standard to make sure the suntan lotion really protected you from the sun's rays. And now the company's got another year to delay implementation of that. So it's going to be 11 years before a rule comes out on suntan lotions. Now, the reason it comes out at the end of the term is that if you're working in the federal government and you want to work on a rule, and it can take as many as 11 years, you have to work really hard to get it done in 4. And the reason you want to get it done in 4 is because you're going to have your bosses, your political bosses are going to have to approve going in a particular direction, getting the regulations written. You don't want to spend 3 years and 9 months working on a rule and then have the next administration come in and says, oh, we don't want to do that, or we want to do it completely differently. So there's a tendency in every administration, Democratic or Republican, for the rules to come out at the end of the term because they're working like the devil to just squeeze it in that four-year political
period of time.
Window.
Yeah. Has anything, I mean, just specifically about that, the president's term ends at midnight on the day of the election. I've never heard of anything like this being tried before. I don't know if you have looked into any history, but that seems, that's really substantial. And, I can understand the use of the phrase coup d'etat when it comes to something like that. Is there
actually, I think there's an argument that it's unconstitutional that the president can't enforce the laws for 2.5 months of his term. But I think that it shows just a general distrust of the system by now people who are in the system.
Hmm. Well, what do you mean by that? Which people in the system are distrusting?
Well, the people who are promoting these types of legislation don't trust the system to work, so they're trying to put to throw wrenches into the gears of government. So new standards don't come out. New rules don't come out.
It's funny when you say throwing wrenches into the gears of government. That reminds me of the early 60s when I believe it was the alleged radical Mario Savio talked about that, throwing ourselves on the gears of the government. Now we have that. Those are people way outside of the actual power centers trying to, do a little civil disobedience. But this is people at the very center of power. And it seems awfully unprecedented. I don't know if part of your job, Scott, is to look into precedent for these things. Is it unprecedented?
I think the moratorium on regulations is clearly unprecedented. I don't think I've ever heard of that, clearly ever getting a vote. I mean, we would have Representative Tom Dulay, who used to be
the hammer
majority leader in the House. He would put in a bill every year to close the Environmental Protection Agency. But those were just bills introduced. They didn't really go anywhere.
Uh-huh.
This is something that has had multiple hearings, actually multiple votes. This Congress has had a campaign against particularly environmental standards and rules. The House of Representatives has had over 284 votes trying to turn back environmental rules during this Congress. 284 just on environmental standards. It doesn't include these regulatory reform ones that we were talking about. Those are more general.
Wow.
The 284 is more votes on this one issue than the entire U.S. Senate has votes on everything this Congress. So there's I hate to use the word, jihad against environmental standards, and it keeps coming up on the House floor on more than a weekly basis.
It does seem like jihad that means holy war, and it kind of has that feeling. The word jihad, in America it's fearful. People think, wow, a holy war. Frankly, it doesn't seem like that much of an exaggeration to call it a jihad. It's curious how the mainstream media, I haven't even heard about this until I saw your article. It certainly caught my attention. So you say there are seven different aspects. We talk about the regulations, the ability to make regulations, and there was one other one. And what else are some of these attacks that are going on?
Two of them are really outside my area of expertise. They have to do with the Securities and Exchange Commission and not requiring as many rules under the Dodd-Frank bill that was passed after the collapse. There's another bill that requires more steps in the regulatory process concerning what's called unfunded mandates, bills requiring the states to do something that the federal government doesn't pay for. There's things like that that just were all put into one bill with the idea of slowing down, making more difficult regulations and new standards to come out that people have been waiting for a long time. Another one, a good example, one that's not very controversial, is efficiency standards for appliances. Government has set appliance standards for years. Just the one for refrigerators over the last 20 years, as refrigerators have become more fancy, they've also become more energy efficient.
Yes.
From a time before regulations, they were becoming more expensive, more energy wasting. Now, because government put up standards, the creativity of American industry has created much better refrigerators that are so efficient now that we did not have to build 50 new coal power plants.
Wow.
And there are standards that the Department of Energy is working on for a whole host of other appliances, washing machines and others, that this rule would have stopped. So a lot of these businesses looking for guidance. Another one is standards for automobiles, efficiency standards for cars, which was worked out between environmental groups like ours, the federal government, and the auto companies. And those rules would also not take effect. And then the automobile manufacturers are going to be in a difficult spot to figure out what type of cars they should make.
Because they don't know
what... There's a lot of these rules that they really didn't think about, really industry does want.
Yes. And it's fascinating to me how it would appear that the number one concern for all Americans, left, right, whatever, is jobs. And these new efficiency requirements that have been there for a while have, it seems, inarguably created new jobs. It's required more inventiveness, more American ingenuity, more creativity, and thus created more jobs. And correct me if my logic is incorrect here, but it seems to me if there are fewer efficiency requirements and things like that, I imagine it makes GE and other companies that make refrigerators more profitable, but doesn't require them to create new jobs. It makes it, just slim down. They don't have to worry about that. So they can perhaps cut back on their labor force even more. Now, that's real great for the economy. Is my logic okay here, or am I missing something?
Using the General Electric example you just mentioned is a good one. They sell a lot of things to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I'm going to get the numbers wrong, but the scope, I think, correct.
Sure.
And that is, GE has a medical division, which has like a turnover of their product line every 3 or 4 years, 100% turnover.
Wow.
Because there's new research, sure, into new things that require, and with competition and with new technology, they need to get up and really change their product mix very often. They also sell things, turbines and other things, to electric utilities. They're using the same material, the same products, for 20 years. Certain industries, particularly monopolies like utilities, mm-hmm, have no incentive to be efficient, to be better, whereas in medicine, where there's worldwide competition,
sure,
for doctors, things move quicker. If we can get more standards on utilities, which we've been trying to do with the cross-state pollution rule, and a rule to limit the amount of mercury that comes out of utilities, this will really create jobs because we're not going to buy the power from India or China. It has to be made here. And frankly, most of the regulations that people have been complaining about are those on utilities. And utilities are targeted for standards because of the 80-20 rule. They cause 80% of the pollution, and therefore targeting them avoids having to regulate small and medium-sized businesses. But they are behind a lot of this push for less regulations, less standards, more pollution.
Amazing. Amazing how it's clearly bad for the economy. It's going to create fewer jobs. If you just tuned in, you're listening to The Burt Cohen Show. Our guest today is Scott Schlesinger, Legislative Director for the Natural Resources Defense Council. We're talking about this amazing new push in Congress, no doubt by the Republicans, to just gut and really, you know, gut environmental standards and really change the role of government, it seems to me. Scott, I wonder how much of this might be some kind of political reaction to early in President Obama's term, he appointed Van Jones, who intended, his focus was to create inner city jobs where they're most needed, to having jobs that improve the environment and help the energy picture as well. And of course, Van Jones took tremendous heat from that ever wise one, Glenn Beck, and the president caved in on that and let Van Jones go. But here was a move by the president early on, back when he seemed to be a bit more optimistic and energetic, to create jobs, cleaning up the environment and improving the energy picture. Do you sense some kind of very strong reaction to that? Is that any, I mean, I don't know if you can, you know, talk about the political aspects of it, but working there on the Hill, I bet you can.
Well, Van Jones is a member of our board, and I think he was very, very effective in the job.
Yeah.
I think the issue is more basic politics, and that is that there's a recession going on. Whenever we've had recessions in the past, we've had major stimulus programs to create jobs.
It works.
And generally, this is the first recession where, because of government not having a stimulus, we've laid off a million public employees in the states. One of the parties, the Republicans, clearly doesn't believe we should be spending money, so they needed a jobs program. So they've invented the connection between regulations and jobs with their little phrase, job-killing regulations, which is clearly not true, but that's the only instrument they have to play in this band to get us out of a recession. Is, I mean, first they couldn't be for tax cuts because at the beginning of the recession, nobody was paying taxes. That was a major problem because no one had any income. But ever since, their alternative is stopping standards and regulations. So it's really clear from independent studies, from many universities and groups throughout the country, that the net impact of setting new standards is minimal and probably slightly positive.
Yeah, well, it seems that in the past, if done right, government stimulus has generally worked, and austerity in the time of recession, most, if not all, economists agree, is the worst possible thing you can do. It's just, it doesn't work, except I suppose a few at the very top benefit from it. Who is sponsoring these bills? Is it the usual suspects?
Yes, it's a group of Republicans, many of them freshmen. Many of them are some like McKinley of West Virginia and others who really think that regulations are unnecessary and are hurting, in his case, the coal industry. And others are just this one-note argument that we need to cut back on standards and rules.
Because they're able to say it's job-killing. I wonder, do they even attempt to use any statistics to make their argument that these rules and environmental regulations cause a loss in jobs and are bad for the economy? What's their...
Not only do they not use statistics to prove that, they have problems finding examples where people have lost jobs because of some rule or standard. In fact, the Chamber of Commerce and a congressman who heads one of the committees asked industry for the list of rules that they wanted Congress to get rid of. And about 95% of the list he got, and it was a big list, but 95% were future rules. In other words, people complain that rules are going to be really bad for their industry, going to cause the apocalypse, and they're going to have to lay off people. But they can't point to old rules where that's occurred. And that's one of the odd things of this is that we'll have, I'll go in and talk to a congressman, and he'll just have talked to a small business, and he'll say the small business was against regulations. And I said, did he give you an example? And the answer is no. I've met with members of Congress who are trying to change the regulatory system, who are part of these people who are against these bills. And I asked them, can you give me an example of one rule that caused job losses that was bad for the economy? And nobody has an example. And I've been in this business for 30 years, and it's always the next regulation that's going to cause the end of the world. The old ones, though, it turns out it wasn't as expensive as they thought. Oh, they were able to figure out how to do it easier. Oh, it wasn't such a big deal. And so there's a myth. The problem is that nobody, since they had to get a pass to go to the bathroom in third grade, believes that regulations are good. But when you tell people, gee, do you think we should have a speed limit? Gee, do you think we should require bars to close at a particular time? If you're specific on health protections, on safety protections, on other things, people say, oh, yes, we want that rule. Yes, we want that rule. But the idea of regulations in general is something that people think are wasteful rules, though it's hard to figure it out. You're in the radio business. There's a rule that says that another radio station can't be so close to your station that nobody can hear it.
We like that rule.
You like that rule? Those are the types of rules the government needs because the market, which is not free, but right, our enterprise system requires rules of the road or it doesn't work. The market system is not perfect, and since the 1700s, 1800s, John Locke, everyone mentioned we need standards and rules to make the system work. I think you would think we would learn from the collapse of Lehman Brothers in our financial system, with after the Horizon spill because of inadequate regulations. The call that now we need to get rid of regulations doesn't seem to make sense, but it's taken hold with apparently a lot of members of Congress and maybe some of the electorate.
Well, it does seem that it must have been poll tested, the phrase job killing regulations. It's like, you know, very wealthy people, the new description of a very, very wealthy person is a job creator. You know, they may not create one job at all. They may wipe out hundreds or thousands of jobs. And it's a myth. It's clearly a myth, as you're saying there. And I'm reminded, you talked about John Locke. Well, there was, of course, Thomas Hobbes, who I believe said that life was short, nasty, and brutish. And then, you know, Locke came along to say, you know, it could be that way, but to have a civil society, we have to have some rules. I mean, people like to go to a football game. There are rules in a football game. Generally, the field is level. There are rules that everybody agrees to. We don't want to go see, you know, an all-out knife fight where there are no rules at all, where the people with the weapons could come up in the stands and start, you know, chopping. You know, and it seems to me most people would agree that, well, should a bartender be required to stop serving somebody who's obviously inebriated? Yeah, I think it's probably a good idea. But there's this myth stuff that seems to be going around here as you describe it. fascinating. What is the place of science now in this Congress in environmental policy making? Is there any place of science in it, or is there, is myth just trumping science?
I think to say that there's been a war on science may be a slight exaggeration, but clearly people feel much more comfortable with their myths. It's like climate change. Climate change has been a very difficult case for us to make, because it isn't that people didn't believe it was getting warmer. They just didn't want to have to pay for the solution.
Right.
And so people figured out, you know, the argument was, well, if I believe that it's caused by humans, I have to do something about it, and that's going to cost me money. So I guess we're going to think that, well, it's better to believe that it's not caused by humans and we can't do anything about it. That's obviously the short-term non-solution, but it will lead us to spend billions and maybe trillions of dollars in taking care of the disasters that we've seen throughout the country this year.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that there's the idea, like there's been a whole host of bills where lobbyists have gotten Congress to try to weigh in on issues that are nowhere near their expertise. For instance, how toxic is coal ash is not an issue that Congress should be deciding. That should be left to scientists. Lobbyists who don't like what science has said about coal ash have a better idea. They think the politicians listening to lobbyists should write the coal ash standard.
Interesting. Well, I could hazard a guess as to what lobby interests are driving the legislation. My guess would be coal, oil, nuclear. Is that about right?
And actually, nuclear is not. They for some reason understand that you need good standards that people believe in, or they're going to have trouble being able to put their facility anywhere. Between the two you mentioned in the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, those seem to be those who are really the ones pushing this. The chamber has this big campaign against standards and regulations. Though, if you read 2 years ago a statement from the president of the chamber, where they keep putting small business up front as the victim of all these rules and regulations,
mm-hmm.
he has a statement where he says, but really 95% of the rules that small business complains about are state and local rules. But they've been using small business for a reason as the victim on the rules that protect us from utility standards on mercury, utility standards from carbon, utility standards from other toxic pollutants. So there's sort of this bait and switch going on, and it's pretty pathetic.
Well, you said that you've been in this business for about 30 years. What's it like to be there now as compared to other times with regard to this, to the work that you do?
It's challenging now. we're playing a lot more defense than when I was working to help pass the Clean Water Act in 1977. It's you know, there's a lot of people I work with on the Hill who are very dedicated, who are very thoughtful, and working with them has always been a great part of my job.
I'm sure. Well, how much, this question is sort of a two-part question I wanted to ask. You know, there's the heavy money interests on one side. I mean, it probably really is this simple. And on the other side is the environmental community. And the other side seems to be, you know, very powerful. They got a heck of a lot of money. I suspect they pay their lobbyists more than you get paid. I wonder how much cohesion there is in the environmental community. There's a lot of different groups. I mean, if you're on any fundraising list, you're on a lot of fundraising lists if you care about the environment. What is the NRDC's role, and how much cohesion is there in the environmental community facing this incredible assault?
Well, clearly, you're right that the money on the other side easily dwarfs what the environmental community does. in lobbying, campaign contributions, and other things. And yes, you're right that lobbyists for General Electric make a lot more money than I do. But I think that because of these attacks, the environmental community in Washington, all the groups that you get your mailings from, do work very closely together. They sometimes we divide up issues. Sometimes we work together. NRDC, for various reasons, takes the lead on a lot of these issues. But we work with our compatriots a lot because we all see that we're part of the same defense that needs to be done, and that we do coordinate very well. And I think so that, frankly, we're not wasting our right. contributors' money.
Right, and there's not too much overlap of efforts. That's a good thing, because I know that can happen if things aren't coordinated well. I wonder how coordinated it is within the Republican Party. There's a large freshman class of a lot of Tea Party people who seem to be, you know, really in the employ of people like the Koch brothers and the coal industry and the oil industry. I mean, just I don't know if they take their paychecks directly from them. But how united are the people in this? Are the Republican members of Congress in this really unprecedented assault on health and the environment? Are they really united pretty much? I mean, I've known a bunch of congressional Republicans through the years who are not totally insensitive to the environment. In fact, some of them have even talked about the environment as, you know, part of their base, really. So what's the cohesion getting behind these amazing bills?
Well, that's not an easy question, but generally there are parts of the Republican Party that, like the Tea Party people, who may be really anti-regulations.
Right.
The number of moderate Republicans has obviously shrunk over the last 10 or 12 years. There were only two Republican congressmen, who voted against the bill we were talking about at the beginning, one of whom is Mr. Bass from New Hampshire.
Indeed.
But when you get all but two of a party going in the same direction, that shows a lot of cohesion. And it's just the history of the Republican Party, probably since the turn of the 19th century, has always been generally smaller, more narrow, in that there's less diversity. The Democratic Party obviously had a period of almost 70 years when there were very conservative Southern Democrats in it.
Yeah.
The parties have become much more similar, though there are still many factions of the Democratic Party and less in the Republican Party.
It does seem to be the case, and of course, you know what quote I'm about to come up with from Will Rogers, who said, "I'm not a member of any organized party. I'm a Democrat." And that seems to be the case in a lot. What's happening? So the House seems to be pretty united in lockstep behind these measures to wipe out environmental regulations and rules. What about in the Senate? Are they in lockstep with the House Democrats? House Republicans. Of course.
Yeah, the Senate is a completely different animal because of some of their strange rules, where these bills can't pass unless they can get a supermajority of 60 votes.
Right.
So there's a core of Republicans in the Senate who would vote for most of these House bills. There's been votes in the past, but they generally do not get more than the mid-40s or low 50s on certain of them. So they haven't passed right. yet because of the requirement of a 60-vote majority.
Now, here we are bumping up real close against the election. You have suggested, this effort, this multi-barreled effort on health and the environment affects things like, as you mentioned, the Dodd-Frank banking reform. It, you know, wants to free up those interests that dug the big hole in the first place and make things worse. Would it affect, and it certainly would affect food safety. What about the thing the Republicans all love to hate, the Affordable Care Act, so-called Obamacare? How would these bills affect Obamacare?
They would essentially bring that to a halt. Many standards are needed. The bill doesn't self-implement. The same thing with things like workplace safety. Occupational Safety and Health Administration has been working on getting particular toxic substances out of workplaces, such as beryllium that causes lung cancer and other fatal and chronic diseases. However, these standards can't go final unless they can write those regulations. And this is a big problem in electronics and metalworking industry.
Now, we're talking about, I mean, you're with the Natural Resource Defense Council. You work with the environmental community. What you just talked about, workplace regulations, health. Is there a health aspect of this that I mean, I don't know about health organizations. I mean, there's Doctors Without Borders, but I don't think they come in on this. What about the health community, the medical community? I mean, you know, they have their interests as well, and sometimes they even have money to contribute to campaigns.
This attack on regulations, as you noted, is well beyond just environment.
Right.
And we are working with consumer groups, labor unions, groups who are concerned about the banking system, food safety groups, in a coalition called the Coalition for Sensible Safeguards, which is trying to get broad support. It is a broad group of, I think, 75 groups in Washington to fight back on this regulatory fight that we've been having. And so we do work with groups, because everybody who looks to the government for the safety net,
right,
for educational programs, for health, all those need regulations. And we've been working very closely with those other groups, because we obviously have a similar interest in making sure that the government can do its job of protecting us from the things that we can't protect ourselves from.
Yeah, we a lot of us would like to move beyond the abuses of the Gilded Age in the 19th century, you know? I mean, here we are in 2012. And as we approach the election, I wonder what you know, I hate to be cynical, but oh, what the heck, what devious intention there may be to actually shut down government before the election. Is this, could this, that goal be part of what they're doing here? And where are these bills now?
I'm not sure what their motives are. I think that they're trying to score political points.
Right.
They think that this agenda plays well. As you noted, it probably plays mostly to their base, because we have been pretty unsuccessful in getting the, excuse the expression, mainstream media to adequately cover these stories.
Right, I have heard.
And that's been a problem. So a lot of it is to their base. A lot of it, I suspect, is to their contributors, who have specific rules they don't want to come out. I assume they think this is going to help them in the elections for the House and the Senate and the White House during the rest of this year.
What about the possibility of shutting down government? That specter keeps being raised again and again. I wonder if this might actually be a tool to shut down the government, which maybe their base would like. I can't quite understand it.
I think that they think that a real shutdown of government, that is, stop funding the government after October 1st at the end of the fiscal year, is not a political winner for them. And I would doubt they'd be that suicidal.
And if you just tuned in, Bert Cohen here. We're talking to Scott Schlesinger, legislative director of the Natural Resource Defense Council, about a multi-pronged attack on health and the environment, basically doing away with rulemaking and regulations. How the heck did they come up with, you know, as you said at the beginning of the show, that unemployment tie-in, 6% unemployment tie-in? What the heck is that? I mean, that seems, how can you... You talk about apples and oranges. How did this happen?
It's part of their mantra of, quote, job-killing regulations, unquote.
Ah.
That they think if they keep saying it enough that people will believe that there's a direct correlation there. In fact, if you watch floor speeches, it'll be a very odd day when you don't hear somebody making that connection.
Oh, I see. So correct me if I'm wrong here. Until we have more workers, until the unemployment rate drops from 8-point-something to 6%, we have to do away with rules and regulations, because the argument goes that the rules and regulations are what's creating the unemployment. Do I get that right? I mean, it's a bit of a stretch for my mind.
No, that's exactly it. And it's working on future regulations that they're specifically aimed at. A lot of the 280-some votes we've had have been trying to get rid of standards that have just come out. But the bill that was voted on last week was going forward, and that is, you know, agencies can't work on new rules on anything.
Wow. And there's just no real correlation to it. Are they... Do you think that the Tea Party people, the people behind this stuff, are they actually, do they not care about creation of jobs in energy and the environment? Is it simply that they really don't care about that? What is it? I mean, do they want unemployment to be high?
Yeah, I'm not probably the right person to try to get into the mind of someone in the Tea Party. But I think that there's a naivete to go back to a time that never existed, when everything seemed to be simpler. But it is that just people don't understand government being in their lives, how much government touches them every single day. First thing you turn on the radio this morning, well, first you have the radio spectrum and who gets what. And then you listen to the weather, and that's the federal government. And then you take roads. Well, that's some government, partially the federal government. And it goes on and on. And then people just assume that the bridge you cross to go to work just happened to be there. And so it's things that government, frankly, hasn't done a good job of explaining what it's doing for people. And a lot of politicians have jumped on this anti-government bandwagon, which, you know, who's for big government? Well, no, but maybe you think people shouldn't die because they're sick and poor instead of being able to get medical care. I mean, there's just a huge disconnect in I think the general public's mind between what the government does and what goes on in their own lives. You probably heard the example that they ask people how much of the federal government goes to pay for NPR and Planned Parenthood, and I think one of the average numbers was about 25% or 30% when it's, you know, well less than 0.25%.
Of course. Oh, that's amazing.
So there's just people don't understand that, you know, you could pay your taxes and be rich and pay your taxes for 30 or 40 years and you built maybe 3 miles of the interstate, maybe a lot less. So there's a lot of things that government does that people just don't associate anymore with the government.
And it all businesses need an infrastructure. They need electricity. They need transportations to be profitable. Okay, where are the Democrats on this? You know, the Democrats, I think, in terms of the Affordable Care Act Yeah, it's tough to explain. The Republicans can say Obamacare, big government coming down on you. Boom, end of story. That's easy to understand. It's tougher to explain the complexities. On these assaults here, trying to do away with rules and regulations, are the Democrats coming back aggressively? And what about the president?
I think, again, the Democrats are house divided. Mm-hmm. I would say the vast majority of Democrats understand the need for standards and have been pushing back very strongly on this thing.
Good.
And I think the debate on the House floor, that there was at least, I think I counted, over 30 Democrats who really took on the Republicans and challenged them on their arguments. The White House could probably do a better job of explaining what government does and explaining the right place for regulations in the economy. But it's a tough sell. It's so much easier to just go back to the, quote, job-killing regulations.
Right.
A mantra. And that's, if anything, has sunk more into the media than the fact that there's a war on health or public standards or banking standards.
And people care about those things, but I think, as you say, explaining it, and I know from running for office in the past, and all candidates recognize if you're explaining, you're losing, you know?
that's unfortunately very true in our 120-character tweet world. But it's something that needs to be done because that's what holds our country together.
Yes.
Is some national standards, so there's not this race to the bottom in different states where we do things for the greater good and the general welfare, as the Constitution clearly states.
Oh, you radical, referring to the Constitution.
I'm sorry.
But, it's amazing how the other side refers to the Constitution as if they own it, and they clearly do not understand the Constitution, what you said, the common good. The public wealth.
I think there's a tendency on the other side to think we're under the Articles of Confederation, which clearly failed, but the states had essentially veto authority over the federal government,
right.
And more decisions, including taxes, were left at the state level, and that's why we wrote a constitution, because it was very clear it was failing.
Yeah, and it does seem like, as a recent show did here, we talked about how the Southern aristocracy of the Confederacy seems to be suddenly in power. It's their ideals and values that have the power. I got to ask you, what's the status of all this stuff here, this massive assault on regulations with regard to health and the environment?
I think this year, with this makeup of the Senate, and with the possible veto pen of the president, this stuff will not go into law this year. There may be one or two specific exceptions that, because of certain compromises, things will get through. But the overall attack, like the bill to pass next week, I don't think has any chance of being signed into law during this Congress.
But it's still important, I think, I would imagine, for people to fight back and say, no, this is the wrong direction to go in. So there's the, I'm just thinking of things people can do, citizens can participate in self-governing. There's NRDC. What's that website? And maybe there's, I don't know if there are other websites you can suggest that people could get involved with.
Yes, please go to www.nrdc.org.
Yeah.
It's Natural Resources Defense Council, NRDC.org, and we have a search engine, and we have a switchboard of blogs, but just type in the keyword like regulation, and you'll see, I know at least, if you type in the phrase regulatory rollbacks with no space, regulatory rollback,
right.
You'll get a list of eight specific blogs on eight rules that would be stopped because of this bill. And other issues like clean air, climate, I think our website is an excellent source for information. Unlike most groups, I would say maybe 20 to 30% of our staff are scientists,
oh, wow,
economists, and other experts, and you'll get you can find the real science behind a lot of these issues. And so I think it's a really good place to get some background on these issues, including the science behind them.
And of course, once people get that information, they can contact their own member of Congress. And it works. When members of Congress hear from their constituents, it does matter. Thank you so much, Scott Schlesinger, Legislative Director of the Natural Resources Defense Council. Boy, we do have to defend our natural resources, don't we?
Thank you so much.
All right. And we have to defend our Mother Earth. Hey, I'd love to hear from you, Bert, B-U-R-T, at BertCohen.com. It's about Mother Earth.
Got to. Oh, you got to.